Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, I want to welcome back to the show, Billy Carson. He is the founder of Forbidden Knowledge, Inc., the best-selling author of The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets, an expert host on Deep Space, as well as Gaia's original series, Ancient Civilizations. He recently earned a certificate of science at MIT, and he is also the CEO of First Class Space Agency in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. His agency is involved with research and development of alternative propulsion systems, zero-point energy devices. He is also a presenter at the upcoming Forbidden Knowledge NewsCon. Billy, welcome back. How are you?
Fantastic. Good to be back on, man.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Now I think is a perfect time to have you, because I believe the only way that we can even attempt to understand what's going on today, and I'm not just talking about, you know, a current global situation, but Modern history in general. You have to look at our ancient past, from mysteries of the cataclysms to hidden knowledge kept by the same ruling bloodlines. And I really believe that no one right now knows what's going on with the true nature of what's occurring globally right now. But that being said, do you have any thoughts on what's currently unfolding on our planet?
Well, you know, it's a twofold thing that's happening right now. One side of it is the, you know, it's the yin and yang story at all times. So on one side is the dark side, and that dark side right now, as you can see, the dark side is pretty much trying to engulf this planet. And what we're talking about, obviously, right now is the COVID-19 coronavirus that has was artificially created and specifically genetically targeted to attack specific people. But then, unbeknownst to them, and due to their poor research and overambitious behavior, they didn't realize that even this artificial virus can mutate, and the mutations then allowed it to circumvent the entire planet. And basically, now we're in this global pandemic situation. So that's one side of it. I think they lost containment, and what they really wanted to do was utilize this thing as a bioweapon to take back a particular economy of a particular country and allow themselves to gain ownership of some of those trade routes. In other words, if a country like China, for example, is producing 90% of the world's pharmaceuticals and 90% of the world's goods, well, you know, what a perfect way to break that up and now reestablish those industries in other countries, maybe India and other places, and then put yourself on the board of directors of those corporations and eat and get some of that money that's already going to happen because people are already buying these goods anyway. And then, you know, the fact that a lot of these pharmaceutical companies were utilizing China to produce their pharmaceuticals, even though they weren't in China, you know, what a brain fart that was, obviously. So now that has been broken down and broken up and split up, and I'm pretty sure 90% of the world's pharmaceuticals will not be coming from one place anymore. So there's a total financial agenda with that. It was also a market agenda because Ray Dalio, who's a multi-billionaire financier, and he runs a $150 billion hedge fund. Back in November of 2019, I posted on my accounts that Ray Dalio, there's an article, I think it was CNBC News or business.com, one of those two, that he had put a $1.5 billion put on the market to crash in March of 2020. This was done back in November of 2019. Obviously, in a $1.5 billion, $150 billion hedge fund, there's a lot of elites involved in that that money there. There's a lot of big people involved there. They obviously had some foresight and foreknowledge as to what was coming. And what they did was they said, okay, we'll put 1% of our $150 billion up on the market to crash in March of 2020 because we're thinking that whatever this is coming, maybe they didn't know the specific name of it, maybe they did, but whatever's coming is going to affect the global markets. And they made the right bet because they made between $50 to $100 billion in March off of that put, that options put. So this is something that was planned, something that was thought out probably from more than 10 years ago, even. They don't think about what's going to happen Friday when they get their paycheck. These elites, they think for millennia ahead. So this was planned long in advance. Just another one of these things that they unleash on the world, the Dark Brothers, as Thoth talks about in the Emerald Tablets. the positive side of this, on the other side that's happening right now, is people are realizing a lot of things right now. They're realizing that they had a stranger in the house called their spouse. You know what I'm saying? They're rediscovering that, oh my God, you know, this person actually is a person that, you know, that I fell in love with, and we live together and we have a, you know, a family together. Also, I think people are rediscovering their kids. On my feeds, people who I've never posted before are doing family events or posting family events now. And I see them with their kids a lot. We're not letting the kids be babysat by video games any longer. They're actually interacting with their own parents. And I think that a lot of people have a lot more time to take a journey to inner space right now and meditate, focus on themselves. I think a lot of people, what's going to come out of this, a lot of people are going to become bit entrepreneurs, because there's a lot of people that now have the time to take advantage of some of the things they've been thinking about, and they've been thinking about things moving into the virtual world, and there's a lot of opportunity there right now, especially if you can put yourself in the middle of two particular things that need to be put together, and you can be in the middle of that, you can make some revenue. So I think there's going to be a lot of positive also, even an elevation of consciousness coming out of this, as people begin to realize that the governments of the world are just, poking around in the dark, and who needs them? We can think for ourselves. So it's going to be it's a combination of both. The dark brothers are trying to do their thing, but human beings, true human beings, will always seek the light.
Yes, and we are seeing that right now. We've been seeing an awakening across the board for a few years now. And like you said, the good things about this, it also kickstarted another movement, another awakening movement. For those who were kind of still on the fence or sleeping, now they're questioning things. More people are questioning things. And you said, like you said, there are great things happening, people spending time with their family, getting to know themselves, getting to know consciousness. I have an overall good feeling that at the end of this, we're going to come out better as humans. Yes. I think it's an evolution process as well. Now, when we look at our current control system overall, we can tie this back to the same ruling bloodlines. I mean, can we actually go as far back as the Sumerian Kings list suggests?
Oh, yeah, we can go back to the Sumerian Kings list for sure. You know, one thing, and this is probably one of my biggest areas of research over the years, is the bloodline that is ruling and controlling this planet till this very day. And when you go back to the Sumerian Kings list, you discover that these Sumerian kings, antediluvial kings, ruled the earth for hundreds of thousands of years combined. Even some ruled for 14,000, some ruled for 28,000. I mean, these people had enormous lifespans. And this Sumerian Kings list is not even a mystery. It's on display at the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, England, right in the center display. So this isn't even a secret. This should be taught in schools. I mean, you should learn this in elementary school even. But we weren't taught about this, but it's out there, and it's a real thing. Now, after the Great Flood happened, these kings, as kingship kept getting handed down, they decided, you know what, from this point forward, we're going to allow a liaison between the masses of people. So what we'll do is we'll create these, we'll mate with a human, and we'll create these demigods, basically. We'll give birth to these demigods, or sire them, I should say. And they will be the quote-unquote kings or the pharaohs that will be the liaison between us and the people. And so after the flood, they reestablished home base in the land of Kem. This is very clear in the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, that the flood waters were receding, and that Enki, who was Thoth's dad, told him to go to the land of Kem and re-kickstart civilization. That's where home base started after the flood. And that's exactly what they went and did. So it's really just amazing. The story that we have here, this bloodline continuing on as they made it and gave head and had bloodlines, and then they kept the bloodline very tight. And you can see, even as Kem became Egypt, because Kem was then renamed Egypt much later, but the land of Kem was overthrown. The Dogon tribe had migrated to Mali, Africa. And Egypt itself had been overthrown seven different times by seven different races of people. That's what people don't realize. And as this happened, and pharaohs were then leaving out of Egypt and migrating across, especially after Alexander took over, and royal families were leaving out and migrating across Arabia and mating with them and migrating up into Europe and mating with Europeans, but establishing the monarchy up there that they were taught. This is the bloodline that links into the Plantagenet line. And that Plantagenet bloodline is directly connected to, for example, John Lackland, the king that signed the Magna Carta. And ironically, all the presidents of the United States, except for Van Buren, are directly related to John Lackland. So this bloodline that's running, and that includes Donald Trump, that includes Obama, because the bloodline can be tracked down the mother's side. Obama's mother is a Caucasian woman named Stanley Ann Dunham. And what's really amazing is, you know, if one or two people or three people are related, okay, then you can say, oh, this is a coincidence. But when you find out that they're almost all related, including non-presidentials, like Dick Cheney is Obama's cousin and Bush's cousin. You know, I mean, the list just goes on and on. It's really, Palin is also Obama's cousin and Bush's cousin. I mean, it's just incredible. So this bloodline has been established, and it's been here and ruling for a very, very long time. It has its own branches. Rothschild and Rockefeller Foundation, oversee the majority of it and make the majority of the decisions from the very top. But they still have somebody they answer to as well.
Yes, definitely. And when we look at some of the control systems that were implemented, such as the monetary system, which it looks like it's about to be changed and overhauled completely again, and also the implementation of religions. And I think that's two of like the largest mechanisms for their control system, wouldn't you say?
Oh, supermassive mechanisms, especially religion. Once they realized, okay, we can keep them under control with these religious ideologies, they really implemented a very, very strong system, and then they, by blood, torture, and rape, implemented it around the entire planet. So when you talk to a person that is into one of these religions, which is the most prevalent one is Christianity, you realize that they really do believe that it was spread around the planet by love and you know, prophecy, when in true reality, it was spread around the world by terror. How Christianity became a global phenomenon was due to the papal inquisitions. And the popes, under the pope's orders, 80 million people were tortured and murdered around this planet to bring Christianity around the entire planet. And wherever they went and conquered and Christianity didn't exist, they raped, beat, and tortured those people into speaking their language and believing in their religion. And it was done so deadly, with such deadly force, that it really, you know, after two generations, it just became, this is it. You know, those people actually believe, like, a person from Mexico thinks that they're Spanish. They think they're Hispanic. No, you're an indigenous Mayan. You're an indigenous Aztec. You're not Spaniard. But that's how hard it is to break these cycles. Once they beat it and burn it into you like that, after two generations, that it just becomes part of them, their makeup. They just believe this is what it is, you know, and it's taught from birth, and the programming begins very, very early. In the case of slavery, you had it where the slave master would sit in the church with the congregation, and they were only allowed to read specific verses, and especially the ones that okayed slavery, which are in the Bible. Even Jesus okayed slavery himself in the Bible. So, you know, it's a very controlling thing. It's a thing that really can control massive populations. And, you know, you saw that in that movie that had Denzel Washington. I forget the name. It was a post-apocalyptic movie. And the basis of the movie was that the evil guy was trying to get his hand on one Bible so that he could take over the world again. You know, so that tells you how powerful it is.
Sorry, I was muted there. Now, I'd like to look at some of the positive aspects of our ancient past. And you did an amazing job with the Compendium of the Emerald Tablets, kind of breaking it down for people. You know, when you first read it, it can be a little daunting, a little hard to understand. But your book, it breaks it down in a perfect way. And it deals with aspects of consciousness, quantum computing, quantum mechanics, traveling mm-hmm. the stars. I mean, mm-hmm. all these amazing things. And they seem to have been altered and changed throughout history to fit the various religious texts. But this original, manuscript, if you will, it's mm-hmm. amazing the things that we can unlock and learn about humanity.
Right. Absolutely. There's two versions. One is Doriel's version and one is Roger Bacon's version. I took a little bit from both and I really broke down these tablets as I started to discover a lot of incredible secrets of esoteric wisdom, knowledge. What I learned from some of the pyramid priests myself in person in Egypt, also I combined in there. And as I related what I learned from the pyramid priests with what I was reading in these tablets, I realized the correlation. And I realized that they themselves were just passed down this knowledge from these ancient tablets. And it was really amazing to see, for example, in one of the opening scenes in the Emerald Tablets, Thoth lands in the land of Khem, and as he opens his doors to his ship, because the ship descends down to the land, and he opens his doors to the ship, the barbarians come to attack him, and he raises his staff and he sends out a ray of vibration, stopping them still a stone in the mountain. So he literally used a beam weapon to freeze them in their tracks. Now, when I was reading that, I said, wow, the military has something similar. I had already heard about it called the active denial system. So I talk about this in my book. So I always compare the ancient text to what we have right now. And I do a side by side in the book. Active denial system in the military, if there's a crowd of people coming to riot or attack, they have a beam that they send directly at that crowd and it can freeze you in your tracks, make you feel like you're on fire, make you feel like you have to vomit, make you feel like you're in pain. They have various frequencies that do these things to the human body and cause the crowd to disperse. So we have the same exact technology right now. So I relate these things talked about back then to what we have now as modern technology, you know, the ability to transfer consciousness into another body, which we're working on now. And I show actual science articles in my book talking about us working on that right now and having some success with DARPA, with the Avatar Project, and also with the 2045 Project in Russia, where they've transferred animals' consciousness into an actual computer. So we're on the same path as the Emerald Tablets.
Yeah, you can see how it's unfolding. And when we look at the physical evidence for this, such as what seemed to be a worldwide culture, spirituality, certain beliefs and practices, and building methods, mm-hmm. it seemed to be a global civilization. At that time, they shared ideas and spiritual beliefs and building methods. And we can actually go back and look at this and physically see the evidence of this with, you know, such as great researchers like yourself, the information that you're bringing forth.
Thank you. Yeah. All this stuff was in there. Even Thoth says he built the Great Pyramid and he built it to withstand Earth's force and remain through the years. And when you begin to analyze a lot of the stuff he's talking about, he talks about manifesting solid bricks through light and consciousness, conscious thought. And so I compare it with an article that I discovered on physics.org, where we just ourselves 2 years ago discovered how to create physical matter from light. So once again, we're just now catching up to the ancient past. There's nothing new under the sun, literally. That's the actual true statement that made it into the biblical text, because there is nothing new under the sun. We are only rediscovering everything that already existed. And the ancients did it. They even had meters back then. Meters per second were measured. You can look at the longitude of the Grand Gallery inside the Great Pyramid and discover that it's got the exact coordinates, which are the same numbers of the speed of light in meters per second. Well, people go, wait a minute, we just discovered meters and metric system and meters per second. That's all new, right, in the last, like, 5 decades. No, not really. If you look at the Proto-Sumerian cuneiform text and tablets that were discovered in Mesoamerica, of all places, not in Sumeria, you discover, and they're in the museums, you discover that they had a metric system all the way back then, prior to 6,000 years ago. So everything is new. Everything is just rediscovered. Nothing's new.
And when it comes to us as humans, we can also look at the evidence that's at some point in our ancient past, we had, I guess you could say, an upgrade in our DNA, brain size. And it seemed to be, you know, all of a sudden, and it coincided with this advance in technology across the globe that we saw this, you know, all of a sudden, these great inventions and these great technologies start coming forth.
Yeah, they definitely genetically tinkered with our with us. Now, when you look at the cuneiform tablets, specifically the Enuma Elish and the Seven Tablets of Creation, I like that that work of writing because it predates so many other more modern authors. This is cuneiform tablets, direct translation, and it was translated long before Zachariah Sitchin existed, Gerald Clark, me. None of us were even born. Not even Zachariah Sitchin was born when these tablets were discovered and translated. And that's why I love them so much. So nobody can try to say, oh, this guy did this and this guy. No, these cuneiform tablets were translated by scholars at Cambridge hundreds of years ago, long before, you know, we were even thought of being born. And that's why I like them. And they talk about a war that was getting ready to happen, where the Ijiji working class Anunnaki were working on the planet Mars. They were mining Mars for resources. Mars was kind of similar to what it is today. It was habitable, but very harsh. And they were complaining about the workload and the harshness and the fact that also they didn't have any women. So they decided to have a coup and come to Earth. These are the sons of God that fell. These are the fallen angels. They fell from Mars to Earth. They came down from Mars to Earth. They're all sons of Anu, and they were going to go to battle against the kings of Earth, which was Enki and Enlil. And Enki said, wait a minute, let's stop this war. Let's not go to war. I have an idea. There's an existing being on this planet, which was an existing hominid, probably our cousins, and we can genetically modify them. We can add our essence to them, he said, which is genetic modification, and make them do the work. So what they did was I think our cousins might have been more advanced than us spiritually, but not technologically. They disconnected a few things from them and reconnected a few things and added their DNA. They did it in vitro fertilization with Isis, and she then gave birth, and Hersag, whatever you want to call her, she's got many names, gave birth to the first Adamu, the first modern man. After many, many attempts and cloning and everything else failed, they decided to go that route, and they created this the most advanced human, which was Homo sapien, which was Adam, the first man, Adamu, they called it. But the way we were created in a way, and Enlil got mad about this with his brother, that we can literally supersede, we can advance past the Anunnaki, we can advance past them, because we were created in a way where, you know how a baby comes out, a human baby comes out, can't even walk, can't feed itself, can't do anything. Well, we were created in a way like that consciously, where we came out lower than we were before, but we have the ability to excel even further than where we were. And Lil discovered that Enki did this, put this in us, a disability in us, and he got very angry with his brother because he said, you know, we outnumber them, and if we realize how powerful we truly are, there's nothing to stop us. You know, so that's really incredible. And I love the message there because it shows that we are truly powerful beings, and there are beings out there that come to just monitor and observe us because they know the capabilities and the power that we have. We just haven't figured it out yet.
When we look back at these ancient texts, it always seems to me that Enki was the more compassionate one. He had more of a, I guess you could say, a love for humanity. Mm-hmm. It shows even today that the split in these ruling factions. Would you agree in that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's the same thing. You see it's like Cain and Abel, man. You know, you have the Canaanites. So Cain was kicked out, and he went over, and I think he crossed the ocean and went down into Mesoamerica even. But you have the split between the two sides, and it's very, very clear to see. And it made its way even into politics and everything else, even though it's been kind of skewed and bent in politics, but it even made its way into politics. This split, this divide and conquer has been here for so very long. And it's really been a very, very strong thing used to control and rule the masses and keep us fighting each other so that we can't fight the true enemy, which is this very small group of elites. And the same system they had back then that ruled over people where it was a very small amount of these quote-unquote gods ruling over us. It's still the same system we have today, where we have 7.7 billion now. It used to be 7.5. I checked yesterday. It was 7.7 billion now on Earth. And we only have 100 families running 7.7 billion people. I mean, that is crazy. So what I say to people is, you know, we gotta stop blaming the elites for everything. And the elites did this and the elites did that. Did they do it? Yes. But guess what? There's 7.7 billion of us. We got to wake up, man. We have to wake up and we have to unite. And we have to say, okay, guys, we let you guys have some fun, okay? The last 20 millennia, okay? Your time is up. Now we're going to take control of this planet. At some point, we have to reach that level of consciousness where we become, realize we're all brothers and sisters. We're all one species, one race, and we're in this together. What can we do to stop participating in their system so that we can develop the golden age for ourselves and live a much better, peaceful life on this planet?
Now, while we're talking about the split amongst these brothers, do you think that it is possible at all with Enlil's, you know, hate for humanity at the time, do you think that these major cataclysms of the past, at least some of them, may have been intentional on the behalf of these beings?
Yeah, I really do. I really do believe that they were intentional. When you read some of these cuneiform tablets, you discover that Enlil, he would get angry that the people were getting too loud. And so he would have some of them just killed. He saw human beings as animals, as cattle, purely as cattle. He even one time, he decided that people were multiplying too fast. So he had a skyship fly over their fields and poison the fields. So they must have did some type of chemtrail over the crops and destroyed the crops, destroyed the soil. Let the people starve, he said, let them starve. He would call people off at will, he would kill people. And Enki had more compassion, and not only did he have compassion, he actually had a human wife at one point, which is one of the reasons why even Atlantis fell, was because Atlantis, there were people, there were Atlanteans marrying human beings. These are the same in Anunnaki people. So, some of them really had this developed this love for human beings. And because of that, they were even banished from going back to their home planet and things like that. So we were real harshly punished for this. So you really had to love something to take that kind of punishment, you know? And that's what they did. And Lil was just enraged. He even called his brother Satan when he really was Satan. He made his brother look like he was the evil person, when in true reality, and Lil was the evil person. And Enki was the snake in the garden. Enki was the one that was the bringer of knowledge. Because, you know, in Egyptian, it means symbology. It means knowledge, the wisdom coming. And so he was the bringer of knowledge to Adam and Eve to awaken them up to that they aren't animal and cattle, that there is power and knowledge of self. And when they gained that knowledge of self and self-awareness, they realized they were naked. That's when they had to, you know, put on clothes and everything else. They realized they were naked. It's a real incredible story, man. And I liken it to the Westworld series, which is on HBO. It's an incredible series. If anybody hasn't seen Westworld, I really recommend you watch it, because it's a modern take on the whole gods of, you know, the Anunnaki gods, or which would be us now creating our own people and putting them in this outdoor garden and monitoring and watching them and experimenting with them. It's really an amazing series, Westworld. Really good look.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. Now, while we're looking at these cataclysms, there's, of course, evidence of massive meteor or asteroid strikes. Do you think it's possible that they had the power to control these meteors or asteroids and cause these cataclysms with that?
That's what I meant to get to. Yeah, so there's a situation, there, a scenario in there where one of them is a strike on, for example, Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, there is a Sumerian disk. I actually have this disk. It's a replica of the original disk, which is a star map that shows the path that the asteroid took, or the comet took, to actually strike that particular area. This is really an amazing piece of work. What's amazing about it, it's a star chart. And I believe that it was a directed attack. In other words, they directed this strike directly into the area. I also believe that the global flood might have been a Either they had forewarning of it and could have stopped it, or they caused it. Either way, I believe they could have intervened and stopped this from happening, but they allowed it to happen. And Lil wanted a fresh start. He wanted to wipe everything away and start fresh. And I think he got his wish. So it's really not exactly specifically clear to whether it was forcefully done by him or it was allowed to happen. But either way, I believe there was something that happened because they didn't intervene or made it happen. And Enki got, you know, his brother pissed off again by getting involved and getting with Gilgamesh or Zuzidra, who's also known as Noah in the modern day Bible, and teaching him how to build a submersible. It was actually round. It wasn't a square boat like was described in the Bible. The actual tablets that were given to him were discovered now and actually on display at the museum. And it was a round submersible. And he was only told to collect the local animals that he had. And the others were to take samples of the other animals. So that was a DNA collection of some sort, some type of a DNA bank in a way. And, you know, so his brother got mad at him for helping them survive. You know, so, I mean, they really have done a lot of things to us on this planet. When Enlil came back and saw the Tower of Babel being built in the Sumerian tablets, in the modern day Bible, it was Yahweh who came back, but it's really Enlil. And when he saw the tower, he got disgusted because he realized that the human beings, they can do anything they set their heart to. So he destroyed the tower, and then he changed the people's languages, and he said something interesting. He said, "My seed shall not abide in man forever. His years shall be 120. So right there, you have another genetic modification, because back then, before that, we were living for hundreds or even thousands of years with no problem. He put the telomere caps on chromosome number 2, and shorten our lifespans to maximum 120. And then he separated the people, spread them out all over the planet, and changed languages so we couldn't communicate with each other again. It's just, you know, it's the same old divide and conquer. Anybody who reads that scripture in the modern day Bible and thinks that's the creator of the universe talking, they don't know what a God is. Because that is not what a creator of a universe would even have time to mess around with, yet alone get involved in, separating people and knocking down towers. When you see people working together in unison on a common goal, you hand clap that, you know, you cherish that. You don't separate them and scold them and change your languages and all this other kind of crazy stuff. So, they really have done a lot to, you know, destroy things and control things on this planet and create geological events that I don't think would have happened normally without their intervention. And it's really unfortunate, but now we're at a point where we can realize all of this and we can now, you know, really create our own future.
Now, when we're trying to find evidence of these beings themselves, we can look at, there's elongated skulls that have been found all over the planet, Peru, Egypt, and oddly enough, near these megalithic sites. Do you think that these elongated skulls were, or maybe hybrids of these Anunnaki beings?
Yeah, I think so. I really think that they may be some of the offsprings of the Anunnaki mating with humans, or mating with some type of hominid. Because what a lot of people don't realize is, because now, you know, that we've been here for a couple hundred thousand years as Homo sapien, we've literally forgotten that there had been dozens of different types of hominids on this planet all at the same time. We're the only ones that made it out to this level. I think the other ones were eradicated at some point. But I believe that the offspring of some of these Anunnaki mating with Homo sapiens and other hominids created these very, very interesting looking beings where the bodies have been now found all over the world. And some of them might not even be offspring. Some of them could be direct star brothers or star people that came here from other planets. And that's just how they look. And that's when they died, that's their body type. You know, there were just dozens of hominids have been on this planet. I mean, everything from tiny little dwarfs, you know, the size of maybe 6 inches, all the way to 35 feet. And unfortunately, a lot of the evidence as it's found, you know, makes its way to being destroyed or thrown into the ocean, like by the Smithsonian or whatever. But there have been enough cases documented that these people and these bones and everything else have existed.
Yeah, when you speak of up to 35 feet tall, these giants are another anomaly of our past. And like you said, unfortunately, a lot of the evidence gets destroyed, supposedly by the Smithsonian itself, and we never get to see it. But it's another piece of the puzzle that these beings may have been extremely tall.
Oh, yeah. You know, extremely tall and very, very strong, because I believe that their planet had a different gravitational field than ours. So right now, because we grew up under Earth's gravitational field, we go to Mars or the moon. If you go to the moon, you're Superman, okay? If you go to, if you were born on the moon, you wouldn't be that strong because you're born under less gravity. If you go from Earth to Mars, you'd pick up a gigantic boulder and throw it with no problem. You dunk on a basketball court, you dunk on a 20-foot goal with no problem, double the height of a goal here on Earth. Why? Because Earth's gravity had made you to basically what you would be considered on Mars, a Superman, because your strength and your bone structure and your muscle structure strength is based off of Earth's gravity. I think that the Anunnaki came from a planet, originated from a planet that was probably much bigger than Earth. And because of that, their strength was absolutely, according to, you know, from compared to us, was absolutely incredible. So they were probably much bigger, much larger, and extremely, extremely strong. And they would then have been considered to be Supermen, literally, or X-Men. I mean, their abilities would have been off the charts here.
Now, the Emerald Tablets can also be a great place to get spiritual teachings, to learn about yourself. For you, I guess, just name some of the most profound spiritual teachings you've come across from the Emerald Tablet.
You know, one of the most profound, and I kind of knew it in my heart the whole time, but when I read this, it really said, you know what? This is really the way to go, man. Unconditional love. That's the biggest lesson in this book. If you can have unconditional love for yourself and for others, learn how to forgive yourself. Stop waiting for somebody else on the outside to forgive you. Forgive yourself, okay? Learn to that you are your own savior. That's another lesson that's built into this whole thing, that there's nobody coming to save you. You were sent here to save yourself. You are your savior. You are your own savior. You are your own messiah. And then realizing that being of service to others is also being of service to self, because when you're being of service to others, it's this old Mayan saying, in la kik alakin, I am another you. You realize, according to the Emerald Tablets, that there is only one consciousness that exists. And every other person on this planet or in the universe is just another version of you. That's all it is. So when you're being kind to someone, when you're being of service to someone, you're doing it to yourself. Exactly. And when you understand that and you operate within that mind state and that frequency, if everybody can get on that same frequency, that 528 hertz frequency, this whole planet and this whole universe would change for the better. And that's one of the biggest lessons that I was able to take out of the Emerald Tablets. And I try to utilize that on a daily basis.
You also brought up an interesting point that basically everything is connected. We're all connected to each other. And that's another aspect of the Emerald Tablets that they bring forth, is we live in a possible multiverse with multiple realities occurring at the same time, right?
No, absolutely, yes. It talks about the fact that, which is just now really weird, quantum mechanics is just now starting to realize this. Theoretical physicists are just now starting to say, you know what? There's a multiverse, and everything that can happen is happening, and there's versions of you in multiple realities. Well, Thoth was talking about this 36,000 years ago, made it into the Emerald Tablets. The fact that there is a multiverse, there are multiple dimensions stacked on top of each other, and there's also multiple universes stacked side by side. So we're in a multiverse that's multidimensional. And every possibility is happening all at the same time. It talks about how the fact of that time doesn't even exist. Clocks exist. And basically what's happening is, if you are operating from a higher dimension, you'd be able to see the past, present, and future all at once. Thoth had mastered this, and he had mastered the capability of even utilizing these portals to travel throughout the universe and visit other planets and watch civilizations rise and fall outside of time. So this is incredible. I mean, incredible stuff. And this is, you know, I mean, and we're just now getting to this level with supersymmetry and quantum physics right now, and theoretical physics.
it's amazing. And some of the things that we may see in our upcoming future, like you mentioned earlier, repeating what we saw in the ancient past, extremely advanced technologies that, you know, things we couldn't even imagine. I wanted to ask you, though, do you think that these beings, some of these original Anunnaki beings, Enlil, Enki, even Thoth, do you think they're still around today somewhere?
Yeah, I believe that some of them are still around. It appears that the only thing that could stop them from living this long would be getting killed or murdered. And even then, they had a lot of capabilities to bring people back to life. They had real advanced technology, man. You got to realize they were 1 million years ahead of us. Okay, that's the estimate. They're about 1 million years ahead. For them to land here 450,000 years ago and set up a base camp here, set up one on the moon, set up one on Mars, and the technologies that they utilized to do that, you already had to be close to another 400,000 or 500,000 years to just to get to that point. And then they landed here 450,000 years ago. So I estimate that they're about 1 million years ahead of us. You know, their technology is outstanding, and they've also integrated technologies into their bodies, which gave them the godlike features. So if you see somebody, you know, that can fly, for example, or has boots on, you don't know if they're, you know, in ancient times, this guy's boots are anti-gravity boots and he can levitate from his boots. We don't know, you know. We're just now developing these jet packs that you see guys flying around at the arenas in now. We just now developed a pack that goes on the back, a delta wing that goes on your back with jets built into it. And you see human beings flying alongside jets now. You know, this is amazing stuff that we're doing now, but imagine this existed way back then in ancient times. These Anunnaki had this technology. And because we were so less advanced technologically, everything looked like it was a miracle of a god. And in true reality, it was just technology. We just developed this one piece of technology that you could put on the back of your ear. It was done at Harvard, and it taps into Google. And without any wires or nothing, it talks directly through the bone. So it vibrates and sends it right into your brain what's being said. So you think about the question, and then the answer comes back through your bone, right into your ear, right from the internet. So you know everything. And imagine if you're an Anunnaki and now a human being's asking you questions and you've got all the answers because you've got this thing built into you that can you can just query through your thought and it comes back with all your answers. You look like you know everything, but it's just technology is all it is.
Now, when we look at the technology of today, you're CEO of First Class Space Agency. Let's start there. What type of technologies are you working on?
I'm working on the very first thing I did invent, which actually physically exists right now, is a deep cycle battery, an AMG deep cycle battery. I was able to triple the amount of amp hours through a special thing that I discovered, and I incorporated it into the battery. So right now there are several countries looking at that battery because a small house can stay powered for at least 4 to 5 days. You can even power, you can connect a 3,000-watt power inverter to it. You can connect power tools to it, and you can run power tools. And because it connects to a solar panel that's portable, you can charge it, and you can have it on indefinitely. And you can also rapid charge it as well. It will take a rapid charge, too, so you can have both. And it will kick in instantaneously in case of a power outage or a brownout in your area. So that's one technology that I developed that can be used for space. It could be used for you know, a base camp on another planet. It can also be used on a marine boat. It could be used, you know, in a tent. It could be used in a very small house in a third world country. So that's one right there. And then the other technologies are on white paper and R&D. One of them is a deep space communications array that works from quantum entanglement. So you have your command center here on Earth. And then within 20 years, we'll be flying out to Jupiter and Saturn for vacations, okay? Now, or at least research. You know, when you get out there, it takes a very long time. It could take a month to a month and a half for your message to get back to Earth. And then a month and a half for a reply to go back. We don't have time for that. But if there's already an array that has been sent out ahead of time that's quantum entangled with the home crystal here on home base, now you just send your message to the closest array probe. That probe then decodes that message into atomic spin rate up, atomic spin rate down through quantum entanglement. Spin rate up is a zero, spin rate down is a one. Those ones and zeros instantaneously bypassing the speed of light create the spin rate up and down at the home base crystal. And that those spin rate up and down of those atomic structures will be opposite of what's going on at the first probe out there in deep space. So now you just take, if it's a spin rate up is a one and a spin rate down is a zero, it's going to be spin rate up, spin rate down is zero, spin rate up is a one. And now you convert those zeros and ones into data that can be decoded into a message very quickly, very rapidly, in milliseconds. So your message becomes instantaneously transferred from deep space back to the home base quantum entangled crystal. So that's one. Another one is single layer carbon fiber graphene spacesuits. So they look very similar to the Black Panther suit, for example. I'll give you a good example. They're knife proof, they're bulletproof, very, very strong material. They can be used in space, they can be used in deep sea diving, they can be used in military. A lot of applications there for that particular material. And we're also working on a perpetual motion generator through reverse magnetic fields. And the thing that we're working on now with a couple of engineers is to add torque and gear ratio so that we can create more power output. So that's, you know, that's one of my, we have a small one of those built now, a prototype, very small prototype, and also working on the ferrofluid vortex engine. We have a very, very small prototype that doesn't work on more than 100 RPM, but the goal is to get a full-size prototype built, which we got to tap into a little bit more funding. But that will create a torus energy field that can be electrified, and then because of spinning mercury, can create an anti-gravity bubble, which can reduce the weight of an object. So we got a lot of different technologies that we're working on at once.
That's awesome. Now, when we look at today's technology overall, especially, say, from the military-industrial complex, we're always told they could be up to 50 years ahead of us. Mm-hmm. First of all, do you think that we have a more advanced secret space program than we're letting on? You know, Trump recently announced the Space Force. Mm-hmm. I personally believe we've had operations at least beyond our atmosphere for a long time. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, we've had Space Command. The Space Command.mil is over 10 years old. I mean, itself, that's been online and military branch of the government, Space Command, it's been here. What's happened with Space Force is they've been siphoning trillions of dollars every single year out of the budget into these secret space programs. And then now everybody keeps saying, hey, where the hell are you sending the money? We want to know where this money's going. So they got tired of that. And people, even congressmen and senators asking, where's the money going? So now, okay, we're going to create the Space Force. Now, this is where the money's going. It's going to the Space Force. So there's no more hiding the trillions of dollars anymore. This is where we're sending it. This is, it's just another thing to say, okay, this is where the money's going. Is it real? I believe it's real. Do we need a Space Force? I think we actually do need a Space Force, in my personal opinion. I think that there is a secret space program. NASA is more like a front using rocket propellant. And, we're still using combustion engines in our cars, for goodness sake. What are we doing here? And the fact that trillions of dollars have been given to them and all they can do is burn liquid propellant to go into space. I mean, come on. That they really have a back-end program. And proof of that are the space shuttles that still take off every single, few months. There's military space shuttles. They take off. They don't have all those rocket boosters. They take off under their own power and go straight into space, and they don't come back for over a year sometimes. Where are they going? They say, oh, they're just orbiting the planet and they're doing top-secret missions. I think that those are cargo ships going to Mars. That's my personal opinion.
What I was just going to ask you, if you think that we're as far as Mars already and we possibly have operations existing there.
I think there's already operations on Mars and have been for a very long time. I truly do believe that we were already on Mars when Kennedy made his speech about going to the moon. Just a very small remnant. I think that there's already military bases and everything else already existing there from some of the space anomalies that I detected from the images that we've looked at. And that when these billionaires leave Earth to go to Mars on that one-way ticket with Elon Musk and some of the other guys, billionaires aren't leaving this planet. And all the creature comforts of this beautiful Earth and all their butlers and maids and their nice sports cars to go live in a tin can until they die. Not going to happen. There's the infrastructure being established there for this breakaway civilization. And when they get there, they may put on the suit and come out and wave to the camera, But when they go behind that hill and turn that camera off, there's structures back there. There's infrastructure. There's underground bases. Everything that they need to survive and live a very good life is there. All of a sudden, they discovered water on Mars, oxygen on Mars, magnetic field on Mars. The soil is great for growing crops. All this is now being released directly by NASA. So it, you know, it's they're going there for a reason, and they're gonna create. Well, they already have the place there called Elysium. Ironically, that movie talked about that. You know, Matt Damon, I think, was in that movie, right? Where only the rich and powerful go to live this, you know, this unbelievable pristine lifestyle, while the poor and people suffer and die here on this, you know, smog-filled planet. So it's really interesting.
So that being said, the moon is obviously a perfect docking station if you're going to be traveling to the Mars. So we obviously must have operations there too, right?
Yeah, I believe that we've been establishing communications with the moon, and I think that there's people still living on the moon or underneath the surface of the moon. And I think that we've been negotiating with them for a very long time. And I don't think that because I'm just a conspiracy guy. There's a few things that happened after Apollo. One of the things is they left a particular type of satellite that can receive a laser beam signal there. And they sent a communications packet to that satellite on a consistent basis. Why are we sending a communication to the moon and nobody's supposedly there? What's the purpose of sending communications to that satellite? Why even leave it there, and why are we communicating, and who's getting these messages? Another thing that happened was we, through the Freedom of Information Act, we got the black box audio and the redacted black box text documents from the Apollo 11, whereas they're flying over some of these craters looking for the landing place, one of the astronauts says, those conical craters down there, and you know, look at them. The conical crater means he's trying to say dome structure. That's dome structure. And then Neil goes, wow, I bet the people down there never get out. That's on the Apollo 11 black box. Then when they flew around the backside of the moon in one of the missions, they actually, their comm was taken over. So their comms went down. Comms were disconnected from Earth comm, because when you go around the backside of the moon, you lose your signal. At least at that time, because we didn't have orbiting satellites to pick up and transmit like a communications array, right? So you go around the backside of the moon. Now you're completely blind to Earth. What happened was something tapped into their comm frequency and started broadcasting music. It was coming from the surface of the moon. It sounded like an orchestra, they said, or it sounded like a choir in a way. Very strange, but they all were going back and forth. Oh, my God, I can't believe we're hearing this. There was a lot of chatter, and all that made it to the black box. It made it to the redacted documents. It's all verifiable, and it's publicly available. It's not even a conspiracy. So I really do believe that, you know, we've established some kind of communication. I believe that now that we're going back to the moon, an agreement was made, and I believe that there may already be some sort of small installation there that we go back and forth to on a consistent basis as well as we establish this, try to reestablish or build this Mars, this advanced Mars colony to make it this new Elysium place, you know?
It's fascinating. Now, in closing tonight, you talked earlier, we both talked about it, this mass awakening we're seeing. We've been seeing it for years, but it appears it just got a massive kick in the ass, and more people are awakening and becoming aware of things. Now, that being said, we're in a situation that's generating a lot of fear, and most people feel like they can't do anything about it. But I believe that individuals, we're so powerful, we can do a lot about it. I think that we have the ability to change our current timeline with collective consciousness. There's so many possibilities that we could be looking at ourselves during this situation to make it better. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. There's always a positive ray of light in anything. It's always something there you can learn from. There's a couple of things that's going to happen with this. First of all, unfortunately, just like nature, there will be the strong that survive, okay, physically. But also, the strong that survives, or the very smart that outsmart this thing by doing smart things like not contaminating themselves and staying at home to the best of their ability, outsmarting it, consciously growing and evolving. So there's a physical evolution of the stronger surviving, and also there's a consciousness evolution, ascending consciousness. Ascended masters are going to be developed from this whole scenario, because right now a lot of people that didn't have a lot of time to meditate are now meditating more. People that were on the cusp of getting to the next level consciously have now acquired the time to do so. Instead of panicking and worrying and be afraid and I'm going, oh my God, we're going to die. No, like I say, what if we live? Okay, what are you going to do if you live? Let's focus on the now. Let's focus on the things that we can control. How you treat yourself, how you respect yourself, how you love yourself, how you love your family, how you love your friends, how are you in service to others? Are you taking this time now to meditate? Several types of meditations. Are you focusing on a meditation to absorb cosmic energy and healing rays and healing energy into your body? Focusing on healing the planet, focusing on positivity, and focusing on manifesting a positive outcome for yourself and your family during these trying and crazy times as well. I think that another thing that's great is visiting with your spouse or your better half and re-sparking or rekindling that what you guys had in the beginning. Or if it's still a spark there, make that spark grow. Make it even bigger and better. Make it stronger. Make it something that could last through the test of time. And also, stop letting the video games babysit your children and actually become a parent to your child. Talk with them, play with them, interact with them, teach them, and get them into it. Start having group meditations. Teach them different levels of knowledge and consciousness. Don't let the TV become their teacher. You now become their teacher. Give them information, knowledge, and wisdom. And another thing I would say financially for a lot of people that can't figure out a way of this, they're tired of these things happening and they're living paycheck to paycheck and then this takes them down, something like this blindsides them. You've got a special situation now. Mortgage companies and leasing companies are now deferring your rent payments and your mortgage payments. Nobody can be evicted. Nobody can be evicted right now. Okay. Another thing, car payments and lease payments on your cars also being deferred up to a year in some cases. And also your car insurance as well. So what does this mean? The money that you were going to pay these other companies to keep your roof over your head, to keep your car and everything, take that same money now, call them up, negotiate the deferments on your cell phone bills, negotiate the deferments on your light electric bill, get all that pushed back. They're going to add it to the back. Now, take the money you were going to give them and invest it into yourself. Find your passion that you've always wanted to do, your passion. Find your passion, find a need for that passion, and fill it with an opportunity, a business that you can form. Something that has to do with the virtual world in case something like this happens again. You don't want to be stuck in a brick and mortar business that has to get closed down unless you're in essential business. We now know that essential businesses get to stay open in certain cases, but still back it up by something virtual. Invest that money into your own business. Get a domain name, get a corporation, research the business, research what you have to do. Start from the ground up, put your goal sheet together, start doing your manifestation meditations, build your short-term, medium-term, or long-term goals. And invest that money into yourself, into your own business, so that when this happens again, something crazy happens again, you're not worried about what am I going to do. You have something already building and growing and maybe even now more dominant than what you were doing before. And then you can branch that off into multiple streams of income so that when something goes down, you always have something coming in. That's what I would say to the people. See the good in everything. Go to inner space and use this opportunity now to generate something for yourself.
Yes, that is excellent advice. And Billy, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Before you head out, let everyone know where they can find your work, website, social media, everything like that.
Please visit Forbidden Knowledge with the number 4, forbiddenknowledge.tv, my new TV network that I just launched. It's doing very, very well. Over 1,200 episodes of great content up there right now. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, anywhere at Forbidden Knowledge with the number 4. Thanks for your support. Thanks for watching. And I want to thank everybody for just taking the time to spend a minute to learn something by watching this episode.
Definitely. Thanks again, Billy. And you enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too. Thank you.